Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Bible on Trial, brought to you by Spirit of Truth Ministry.
This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue.
The purpose of the Bible on Trial, as created by Rich Humpel, is to compare the current beliefs of Christianity to the actual words and teachings of Jesus Christ as he gave them to his own eyewitness disciples, and then discover if there are any differences.
Oh Lord, you know I have no friend like you. If heaven's not my home, then Lord, what will I do? The angels beckon me from heaven's open door.
Now join the Spirit of Truth Ministry team for an eye-opening hour of investigation as we search for truth by putting the Bible on trial. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Wherever you are in the world, we are glad that you are here with us right now today, getting ready for another fascinating and stimulating episode of the Bible on Trial, brought to you by Spirit of Truth Ministry. My name is Dennis Neufeld, and today is July 3rd, 2015. And for those of you who are Canadians, July 1 was Canada Day, and we acknowledge that, and we're glad that you are in the world with us, especially here in North America. We are also very glad that tomorrow is the birth of our nation here in the United States on July 4. And we commemorate that with all sorts of things. Just a personal aside, I hope that those of you who participate by firing off your own fireworks are extremely careful here and within the law, because I'll tell you, in Southern California, we have got fires coming out of the woodwork here, and it is not worth you losing your life or killing anyone else because you had a firework go off and started a forest fire or something, or a brush fire. In any case, we are glad that you are here with us. I have posted on our website here on the chat two links. And incidentally, you'll notice that there are essentially two links and then repeat of them. I forgot all about the fact that you can't put a period at the end of a link and have it go where you want it to. So I reposted the links without the period at the end, and you'll see our original website there posted at spiritoftruthministry.net/STM and our WordPress website, which, by the way, is quite a number of about 50 since the last time we looked at it, registered users, people who have registered for the RSS feed. All that does is it gives you a notification when the new writing comes up. The latest one is called The Grand Plan by Rick Sterling, and I'm telling you, it's a good one, and you should go and read that. That is located at spiritoftruthministry.net. We also, by the way, I just got notice from, Google Apps, that our old website, the STM website, has just been renewed for another year. And so everything is all up and still running. And so we are glad that you have that opportunity to go there and do a little reading. We think that it would be a blessing to you. Lots of stuff has been going on in the world. There's lots of stuff here in the United States that has been driving Christians crazy. And this show is not about current events. But what we do want to remind you is that there is a difference between how the kingdom of heaven operates on earth and how the kingdom of the world operates on this earth. And when people who claim to be in the kingdom of the heavens behave and act as if they are in the kingdom of the world, they are indeed in the kingdom of the world and not in
trying to change
yes,
the kingdom of the world.
And trying to change and saying that we need to change the kingdom of the world to accomplish our business, they have a
so that it behaves as if it was it was following God's
right
instruction.
Exactly. So we'll have prayer and we'll get started. But good morning, Rick. Good morning, Larry. Glad to have you here with us today. Father in heaven, this is a magnificent day to be alive. I pray for those people who have been suffering through the fires here locally and also the heat in the western United States. I pray, Father, that in your mercy, you will relieve us of the dryness and the drought and continue to bless us with some more moisture whereby we can live here in a productive way. I also pray for those who are in the world but not of the world, who are seeking the truth, who are looking to find something different than where they what they are seeing right now. I pray, Father, that you will bring them to this program so that they can be confirmed in what they already know to be true. And I thank you, Father, for your spirit in us and acting through us to bring the truth to us so that we can bring the truth to the kingdom of heaven here on this earth. I thank you for this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Well, we had a good time this morning having our coffee and our discussion, and Rick came up with another one, which I find very fascinating. But before we get to that, I just thought I'd let you, a little personal note, I have been exercising a good deal lately because, again, I told you that I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, hey, it's time to just modify things. You're just getting older, so you can't eat like you're 40 anymore. You know? And so I'm not, and I'm exercising a lot. And while I'm out exercising, I am doing something that I find fascinating and I would recommend to you, and that is to go to our WordPress, not WordPress, but go to our Blog Talk Radio website, go to episodes, and start way back at the beginning. I am now up to March 28, 2015. That was the last one I listened to yesterday. Listening to basically one every time I take the dogs out for a walk. And now I'm going out by myself and running and walking and running and walking just to try to get a little bit more intense workout. And it's a wonderful thing. You can get on the Wi-Fi at home with your smartphone and download it and start it, and then as you go out, it downloads it onto your machine, and you can listen to it throughout your entire workout. And it's a great way of finding out where we have come from and seeing if there has been any major changes along the way. And it's fascinating to know how there have been some minor changes. There have been some minor things that have come along that we have since changed. And maybe a major one. The major one is way back in the old days, we were firmly committed to Paul and to Luke, the writings of Paul in the Bible and Luke. And now you can actually see the change. You can hear the change as we go through the remarkable discovery of the differences between what Paul wrote, what Luke wrote, and what Jesus actually said. So I highly recommend you do that. Anyway, good morning, and tell us a little bit, Rick, about what you discovered by reading Numbers.
Well,
especially Numbers 14.
I started in the law part because our study in the topic that I settled upon a few years ago now, I guess it is. Larry, remember it. I think it was in 2007 or 8. Seeking...
That was 2008, I believe.
Seeking righteousness, justice, and the kingdom of God.
2008.
And we spent a lot of time on the righteousness without saying much about justice, or as I like to define it, is justness. And so I went to the law to read and find out anything new that I may have missed. One thing I discovered was that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were like us. In a way, Abraham was instructed by God to leave his home and his relations and go to a land that God would show him. So Abraham moved. He went to Haran, which was a city that had the name of his uncle, which the uncle was Lot's father, or Lot, his uncle, but Lot was Abraham's nephew. And he stayed there for a few years, and then he moved down into Canaan, or quite frequently called Canaan. But it was not his homeland, and he was a stranger, and what they call a wanderer. He lived in a tent. And his son Isaac lived in a tent. And his son Jacob lived in a tent. And I thought about those who follow God today. As I have studied to learn about a God that I profess to worship and love, I found myself slowly but surely seeing myself as an alien, a foreigner, in a world that I used to call home. There's that in Hebrews. I don't quote much from Hebrews, for there are reasons for that. But there is a saying in Hebrews that I find applicable.
And before you get to that, one of the reasons is that we actually don't know who wrote. I mean, for sure, we don't know who wrote Hebrews. But we do know that the person who wrote Hebrews was not an eyewitness based on what they wrote in Hebrews.
What I can tell you in all certainty in my own mind from my own studies, is that Paul is popularly thought of as the author of Hebrews. I know that Paul did not write Hebrews, and there's many reasons, specific reasons for that, which I'm not going to go into because that's not what this study is about. But that's the thing. No one knows who wrote Hebrews. But there's Hebrews 11, you know, is called the faith chapter. And faith is not a bad thing if it is used in its correct context. What I'm saying about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is defined here in Hebrews 11, starting with verse 7, starting with verse 8. It was by faith that Abraham obeyed the call to set out for a country that was the inheritance given to him and his descendants, and that he set out without knowing where he was going. By faith he arrived as a foreigner in the promised land and lived there as if in a strange country with Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. They lived there in tents while he looked forward to a city founded, designed, and built by God. While he looked for a city designed, founded, and built by God. And I thought, that's me. That's me. And all who like me start to find themselves as strangers and foreigners in this world that we've called home for so long, and now we don't feel like we belong. Dennis was talking about the uproar in Christianity and certain divisions of Christianity over the recent Supreme Court ruling. Like as if it is incumbent upon them to keep the world righteous, when in fact the world has never been righteous since the evil one deceived it into unrighteousness. How many thousands of years ago that was, I do not know, but I can tell you that it was a long time ago, and that this world has been in a spiritual darkness for a very, very long time. So long, in fact, that those who live in the darkness don't know. They are in the dark. And as I have described many times before, God has determined to do something about it. But God needs to follow a specific lawful process in order to accomplish that which he has set about to complete. Wouldn't it be easy for God to just say the word? He could say the word and do one of two things. When the evil one deceived the nations, God could have said the word and it would be as it was before the deception. He could clear the people's minds of all the deceiving, or he could clear up certain unknowns that allowed the deception.
Are you speaking of grace?
Grace could be a way to describe it, yes. Or he could have, just as easily as he did in the beginning, speak into existence everything that there is. He could speak out of existence everything that there is. Start over again. Having learned from the mistakes he made the first time.
Mistakes. It's an interesting concept, because and there are people who believe, and Paul is one of them, that God made a mistake. And that mistake was putting forth a law in the first place that he knew that no one could keep. And so he had to, he tried that, didn't work. Let's go to this other method of salvation.
Well, and here's another thing. And Dennis, I'm getting an echo or something. It's kind of...
Where?
I hear it there. I don't know if it's distracting. Probably it is distracting me a little bit.
The speakers are behind my screen, so I can't hear it.
And people would say, well, that wouldn't be just. I mean, what about... I'm sure there were people who, given the opportunity to decide between God and the evil one, would have chosen God. And yet he spoke them out of existence as he did those who would not have chosen him. But he should know who would choose him and who won't and who wouldn't choose him. So why wouldn't he just speak those out of existence and allow the others to live? And then it starts to get complicated. Because now there would be people who are wondering why their wife was spoken out of existence and they weren't, or the other way around. Or you see, God is not only righteous, he is just. And you might say, well, just as we say, well, why didn't you do that? What kept you from doing that? And the person will say, well, I have to live with myself. And I couldn't live with myself allowing that. God couldn't live with himself if he did anything that was outside of that which is just and right. God knew he would be blamed for what happened, because ultimately he is responsible, because he created everything. He even created the evil one. Now, when he created him, he was not evil. Now, when he created him, he knew. He knew that he would be the one who would deceive the world and who would stand in opposition to him. And he created him. And that is a subject for another study. What I want you to understand is that God is just, And God is love. And God is righteous. And He is where all three meet. See, if you have nothing but love, and I mean nothing but love, then it depends on the love that you have that defines what you do. If you have love and your neighbor does not, and I'm not talking about the person next door, I'm talking about your community or those in the world. If you have love and your neighbor does not, then your neighbor feels perfectly capable and motivated to kill you because your neighbor knows that you will not, that your family will not take
retaliation.
Because love doesn't allow killing. Now, this is what I'm using the world's defining of what love is. To them, love is that love does absolutely nothing that is perceived as bad.
It is perfectly fine. Actually, it gives the person who does not love an advantage over the person who does.
So, in effect, love casts out law. But that is not true. If you live in a world where everyone has love, then what about law? This is what I thought. As I was studying through Numbers particularly, and I began to see that God had so defined right and wrong that you really needed an expert to keep you up to date on what you could and could not do. And I'm thinking, what a different picture this is of what the Son of God was teaching. And it was like every time you did something, you needed to think of, okay, what did God say about this? What am I allowed to do in this situation? Or how can I keep the law here? I need to know what the law is. And it seemed like God had defined legally every aspect of life in the wilderness for Israel. Are you about to read something?
And then Jesus comes along later and says this in John 14:21. He who has my commandments. By the way, that word has means that's an internalized.
It's in his heart and in his mind.
Right. He who has my commandments and keeps them, it is he who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and reveal myself to him.
So what people say is that God has unconditional love, and unconditional love is unconditional. So because God loves everybody, because he created them and he loves them, so he loves everybody, he does not hold anybody accountable for what they do, because he loves them. Oh, they need to not take advantage of that love, but if they do take advantage of it, it's still love.
And this goes back to the same thing you were just talking about. Someone who understands that, for instance, a Christian cannot respond in an ill-considered way to their objectionable advances, you know, they'll take advantage of it. And you see this all the time in the news. And you'll see somebody say, well, you know, they murdered my friend, but I forgive them because I'm a Christian. This is what these people count on.
But you see, this is how little they know about God.
Exactly.
Because God never required anyone to forgive anyone who had wronged them unless the one who wronged them asked for forgiveness.
And made restitution.
Yes. And that is why those who do not really know the God they claim to be worshiping and obeying do not understand forgiveness and all that is involved. And Dennis, if you want to look up what Jesus had to say about divorce, because I'm getting there. So I wondered, why did God have so many laws? I mean, yes, he gave the Ten Commandments, but the Ten Commandments wasn't part of the law. The Ten Commandments was the testimony of performance. In other words, the people promised to perform what God had defined in the Ten Commandments. And God promised to perform what he had defined in the Ten Commandments. And so the Ten Commandments was a testimony to performance. So that when the people were doing what the Ten Commandments said the people must do, and God was doing what the Ten Commandments said God must do, then the nation was experiencing all that the Ten Commandments said that God would do, and ultimately this would attract the attention of the nations around Israel, and they would want to have the same promises and benefits that Israel enjoyed. And the people of the nations around Israel would come to Israel, would learn about the God of Israel. They would promise to perform in accordance to the testimony, and they would enjoy all of the promises that the God of Israel had promised to any and all who committed to keep his covenant. And they would not be treated any differently than those who were native born into Israel.
So God was held as accountable to his covenant as were the people who accepted the covenant.
Exactly. It was a testimony to the promises and performance. And God always drew the attention of Israel. When bad things were happening to Israel, he was saying, look, there's a testimony in the Ark of the Testimony, and it stands as a witness showing that I am not doing anything that I should not be doing, because you have done this and this and this and this, and you promised not to do that. So what Israel wanted was, they wanted all the benefits of their God without doing the things that they needed to do in order for their God to be, in fact, their God. So I'm looking at this list of rules and regulations addressing almost every element of everyday life. Why did God get so involved into this? Were the Ten Commandments not enough? And I know that those who have determined to study the law in an effort to show that God, who they say supposedly wrote the law or gave Moses the law, was a dictatorial tyrant. And in several places, how he's sadistic and masochistic and all of the other horrible, terrible things. And it's there. You can find it. But if you don't know God, then how can you judge God? And then it came to me. Because I was thinking of what Jesus had said about, come to me, all you who are weak and overburdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Follow me. For my yoke is easy. And my burden light. And I thought, all these rules and regulations are certainly not light. And not an easy yoke. But then it came to me. God is working with a people who are beyond salvation. They're beyond saving. They had gone over the point of no return. Not because God said, okay, I have arbitrarily decided that I am not going to forgive you anymore. As some would think. He had basically written these people off. So even if they had a change of heart, sorry, you know, you've already gone too far. There's no redemption for you.
In fact, we were talking about this before the show started, the difference between being foolish and being stupid. And there is a progression of from one to the other that is undeniable.
God does not arbitrarily set a limit. He sets a limit, but it's not arbitrary. We understand from, as it was in the days of Noah, kind of thing. When you look in Genesis at what was going on in the days of Noah, you get the picture that the heart of man was irretrievably wicked. And that's what I mean, is every thought, every day, there was wickedness, and wickedness upon wickedness. And what God says is, they had no thought of love or of doing what is right. Because every day, their wickedness increased. And
this is not to say that they didn't believe that they were practicing love.
And so God knew that the people would never change. If they were given the opportunity to confess their sins, to ask for forgiveness, and to be forgiven, they would never ask for forgiveness because they were so evil. Evil and sin had so infiltrated their minds and their heart that they were so hard.
And it was a
spiritually.
It was a decision that they made, not a condition that they accepted. These people decided to be willingly ignorant permanently.
And the God of this world, that's small g, or the gods of this world, had full control and influence over the minds and heart of the people before the flood. And there was only one person on the face of the earth at that time who was righteous, and that was Noah.
And not even his family was righteous.
God was going to destroy the world with the flood. Why? Because he wanted to start over again? No. God was going to destroy the world with a flood because the world had reached the point of no return. And by that, what I mean is no going toward righteousness and justice. They had no... They were so locked into their way that there was no turning them back, no turning them around.
Would this be a good place to read Matthew 19:3?
Sure.
About the hardness of the Pharisees' heart?
Go ahead.
Matthew 19:3-9. Then some Pharisees came to him in order to test him. They asked, "Is it lawful to divorce a wife for any cause?" He answered, "Have you not read from the beginning the Creator made them male and female? And said, 'For this reason a man will leave his father and mother and will unite with his wife, and the two will become one flesh?' So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate." They said to him, "Why then did Moses command us to give a certificate of dismissal and to divorce her?" Jesus said to them, "Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because of your hard hearts. But from the beginning, it was not this way. Now I say to you that whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another commits adultery."
And then it came to me, and this is what I wrote. Where there is sin, law is required. Where there is more sin, more law is required. Where there is love, law is not necessary. I did not say no law, for there is law, common law. Respect and honor for God and your neighbor. And I realized that that is what the Son of God was saying. He was saying that where there is love, those who love respect each other, and those who love God respect and honor God. And they don't need a list of laws to tell them how, what, when, and so forth. Because no one would do anything to the other that would be bad or
harmful
if they truly loved the other, from parents to spouse to children to neighbor to community to God. love can never be directed to someone if you do not know the other. If you do not know the other, then you cannot love the other. That is why the first and foremost of love is to know. It's easy to explain in the context of marriage, and I find it very appropriate that God has context his relationship with his people as that of husband and wife. You don't just pick someone out of a crowd, grab them, and marry them. You don't even know who they are. You have no knowledge of them. Oh, and yes, it can be done, but let me tell you, what are the chances that it will ever work out? Marriage is never entered into, or should never be entered into, because it is convenient or because it is necessary or for any of those reasons. You need a partner.
It should not be a frivolous issue.
See, you come to know someone, and as you find out about them and interact with them and spend time, you begin to know them. And through knowing them, you either love them or decide that it just won't work out. That is why it is so important to study, to know, to experience what it is to be with God, to love God. You cannot love a God you do not know. That is why God has given all the information necessary to come to know him. Jesus said to the woman at Jacob's well, the woman who lived in Sychar, when she said, "You people say that you must worship in Jerusalem, and our father said that we must worship here. Where is the true place to worship?" And what Jesus said to her was, "You worship that which you do not know. For there is coming a time, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship neither in Jerusalem nor here. For the type of worshipers that the Father desires are those who worship in spirit and in truth. Only through truth will you know how to give spiritual worship, because you are worshiping God who is a spirit." So then I understood why there were so many rules and regulations. The whole of Israel, with very few exceptions, had determined that they really wanted nothing more to do with God. He had taken them out of Egypt, and they now realized they didn't want to go. And they wanted to go back to Egypt, and just continue to do what they'd been doing before, because it was so much better than what they were experiencing now.
And the colloquial expression is, better the devil you know than the devil you don't.
And the other saying, God took Israel out of Egypt with a mighty hand, but his hand was not strong enough to take Egypt out of Israel. And that is profound. And the people had tested God's patience 10 times, which brought me to Numbers 14, and in particular, Numbers 14:21.
And by the way, aren't we seeing the lure of the world today in that same way? It is going to be so difficult to get the world out of the kingdom of heaven.
You mentioned taking the Egypt out of Israel. Taking Israel out of Egypt was a physical process. Taking Egypt out of Israel is a spiritual process, and they weren't cooperating.
And that's why I said that. God's people, Israel, were to be his representatives. His kingdom in the world, but not of the world. The problem that God had is that his chosen people wanted to continue to be of the world. That's why they wanted to go back to Egypt. Well, some would say, well, God really made it hard on them. I mean, he made it hard on them and in effect made them want to go back to Egypt. Because why did they want to go back to Egypt? Did they want to worship the gods of Egypt? That is not what they said, although they figured that worshiping the gods of Egypt would give them the life that they still desired, because that's how you got what you needed, was to worship the gods.
And by the way, no one considered in Israel at the time what Egypt's response to their return would have been, which would have been, without question, the sword.
Well, yeah. But to them, you don't think rationally when you're not given to thinking rationally.
When you're hungry and thirsty, and that's all
you can think
about.
But you see, why were they
about?
Hungry and thirsty? Here's the issue. Why were they hungry and thirsty? God was teaching them. Oh, people say, well, that's kind of harsh. What is he trying to do? Bring them to the point of starvation? God said, what I want you to understand is that your food comes from me. It's not because you're such a good farmer or because you're such a good cook or because of anything on your part that you're doing. I want you to know that your food is coming from me. So when you get into the land and your crops are abundant and your neighbors in the nations around you, they're having a famine or a drought and you're not, I don't want you to think that it's because you're such gifted farmers. I want you to understand that your abundance is because I have blessed you abundantly. And when he sent the manna, he wanted them to learn this. They weren't doing anything to produce the manna except obeying. That's all. What happened? Well, they said, we are so sick and tired of this manna. We want something else.
Whatever it is.
But they wouldn't see any farther into the future than that punctiliar moment in time. God had a plan for them, but they did not want to see that plan. As we read at the beginning about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in Hebrews there, they were looking for a city that was founded and built by God. When we stop to consider, what is God's plan for us? Should we not find out? Should we not try to discover? What is God's plan for us? Has he said anything about it? Well, he has. But little attention is paid to what is written. And what most people know is what they're told. And what they're told is in their institutions of religion, their churches, their pastors. And they go there and they listen. It's the same thing that brought Israel down in the days when the Son of Man was teaching them. And what it was that the religious leaders had so personally defined what God's intentions were and what God's will was, that they had fashioned it into their own liking, what they wanted, how they had defined it, how they had interpreted what God really wanted, what is his intention, and it had become theirs. And this is what they were teaching the people. And so the Son of God came in their midst and exposed this. But who did the people trust? Did they trust the Son of God who came out of nowhere? They knew his parents? They couldn't trust him, or could they? See, this was going on in their minds. And here were these stalwarts of religion. And they were telling the people, don't listen to this man. We can prove that he's wrong. He's come from, we know who his parents were. He cannot be the Messiah. This is what the Messiah will be doing, and he is not doing this. And so the people trusted in the religious experts, and they ignored the one who came to save them. And the same thing is happening today. We must not ignore the words of the testimony of the Son of God. We need to know what those words are, and we need to put them in our heart and our mind before we can, in fact, be what we claim to be. And that is followers of the Son of God. By our words, we will be exonerated. And by our words, we will be condemned. And they must be the words of truth in order to bring us into the kingdom of God.
Thank you, Rick, very much for your study today, for the study, and I recommend join us tomorrow, if you're a listener, another edition of The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling. We have two websites that we'd like you to take a look at. Both are posted up on our chat room. One is the WordPress website, is Spirit of Truth.
Lord, what will I do? The angels beckon me from heaven's open door, and I can't feel at home in the